Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Zvochim Daf Kuf Hei. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. As we turn our attention to the upper part of Daf Kuf Hei, you will notice about 6 lines from the top a diamond, and to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, a Roman numeral number 4 within a little diamond. This indicates that we're in the middle of a series. This series began on the previous Amud Kuf Dalet Amud Beis, where we featured the diamond already, which we indicated were a series of questions of Rabbi Elazar within the realm of the Purim and Sirim HaNisrofim. The fourth question is featured on the side under our topic heading, the Nosei. In the outside margin on Kuf Hei, you notice the diamond with a number 4 in it, Purim Usirim HaNisrofim Shiyotsu V'Chozru. The Gemara, Rav Elazar, will be asking about Purim and Sir HaNisrofim that left the Azora and then came back into the Azora. And what is the din with regard to their ability to communicate the Tumas Begodim? In other words, the people that are dealing with them, with the Purim and Sirim HaNisrofim, after they came back into the Azara, in the event that they left and came back, if someone has a dealing, moves around the Purim and Sirim HaNisrofim, do their Begodim, do their clothing become Tomei as well? Of course, this particular question is assuming that we've already familiarized ourselves with the sugya of Tumas Begodim from the previous shiur. So we're in a sense in a continuation of information, we're involved with continued information from that which we learned earlier. So now turning to the Gemara, Bori Rebbe Elazar, Purim HaNisrofim Usirim HaNisrofim, these particular types of sacrifices whose carcasses eventually will be burnt outside of Yerushalayim, Shiyotsu, they left the Azora, and at that point these animals communicate Tuma to the people involved with them, and not only does the person become Tomei, but the clothing that he wears also becomes Tomei. V'chozru, and the animals were brought back into the Azora. Mahu, what is the din? And as far as this question is concerned, it has two parts to it, as two sides, and you can see that's indicated by the little aleph and O Dilma, which is squiggle underlined on the at the end of the line. You can see or possibly O Dilma, or possibly Beis, which is the second part of this second possibility in analyzing the question. So mi amrinon, do we say kevon denafki itmu lehu, since these carcasses of the Purim and Sirim HaNisrofim left the Azora, the fact that they're brought back in is of no relevance. Once they have left the Azora, they will then communicate Tumas Begodim. Or do we say that since they were brought back into the Azara, it's as if they never left, and hence people who are involved with them at this point in time would not absorb Tumas Begodim. Omar Rabbi Abba Bar Momol Toshma. Notice we have a long Toshma marking to the immediate left hand side of the Gemara Toshma. This represents an attempt to answer the question. Takes a number of lines. You can see that's indicated by the vertical dashed line that follows the Toshma that you noted to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. That all of these lines are going to attempt to answer the question. At the end of this marking, the Gemara will reject this particular attempted answer. And eventually we'll have to actually re-understand what Rabbi Lozer's original question number four was to begin with. So let's see. We're asking about the Purim Asur Nisrafim that left the Azorah, were brought back into the Azorah. What is the din with regard to Tumas Begodim of those people? Toshma, hoyu soivlin oison b'moitois. The soivlin is to be carried. The Purim and Simur Nisrafim were carried on motos, on poles. Yotsu harishonim chutz l'chaymas v'azorah v'achronim lo yotsu. As they were walking out, only the first people involved with carrying them left the walls of the Azorah. In the meantime, the ones behind had still not left. Horishonim shiyotsu, those that left the walls of the Azorah, they're on their way out. So those that left the walls are on the, that are on the other side of the wall, so mitamin bigodim. Vachronim, the last people, the ones at the other end of the poles that have not yet left the Choymas Azorah, Ein metamin begodim ad she yetzu. They don't absorb tumas begodim until they actually depart. Ve'i salka daitoch. If one were to think, kevon dinafki lehu itmu, that once there is departure, that warrants tumas begodim. Hanoch the iko gavoi nami litma. Those that are still inside should also absorb the tumas begodim. But the fact is that we just saw the source saying that those that remain, that are still inside, do not absorb tumas begodim. In order to appreciate what the Gemara is trying to prove from this, we must look at the Rashi. Rashi across from here says, Hanoch de'iko gavoi nami nitmu. Those that remained inside, or that are in the meantime still inside, should have become tomei with tumas begodim. Deha yitzia le'inyan tumas begodim beporem ksiva. The term or the concept of departure with regard to tumas begodim is written in the context of these porim. It says, Yotzi el michutz lamachane v'sarfu v'chulei. Uminei yalfina l'kamo pirkin, and from that we learn later in the perek, lomar loch, kevon shi yotzo hapar chutz lamachane achas, mitame begodim, that once the par leaves one camp, the machne shechina, there is tumas begodim. Afal pi delo nofuk gavri nitmu. Even though the people didn't leave, there still is tuma. So we have the following scenario, where the Purim and Nisrafim left. The people at the back end are still inside, but the cow has left. The people that were at the front end of the poles, first ones out, began their receiving or absorbing their tumas begodim. So why is it that those that remained inside have not absorbed the tumas begodim? Elolav mishum diomar. It must be because we say the e hodar hodur. Because if in the event they had left, they come back in, the returning into the realm of within the walls reverses the tumas begodim, namely the people that are now involved will not absorb tumas begodim. You know, let's go over that again. Even though it may have left, if it's brought back in, people that would be involved with it would not absorb tumas begodim. The kol shekein elu shemuchzorim viomdim sharei lo yotsu, and certainly those that remain inside will be tahor. They won't receive tumas begodim. After all, they didn't leave. So from the fact that the ones that have not left are still tahor, that shows us that in the event that it would have left, the return back into the Azorah is reason for declaring tahara. Oma Ravina. Ravina responds. He says, V'tizbara, is this raya worth anything? Trying to bring a raya from the ones that remained inside to the case of where something had left and come back in, is that proof to anything? Ha bo'ino v'achar yovoi el hamachane v'leka. In order to talk about tumas begodim, one would have to left the camp, the machne shechina. Those that remained inside, that never left, they never came to a situation of tuma in the first place. So it could be that those that never left, they have no tumas begodim. But those that had left and come back, that's a different story. Elo, so the question then is now, if that proof is no proof to Rebbe Lozer's original question, what really was the case of the original question? The Rashi explains more on this. Let's glance together at the Rashi. The Rashi you'll find is Dibur Maschil Uparchinon Elo Rebbe Lozer Hechi Boilo. The Gemara is really asking, what is Rebbe Lozer's question? That represents the next few words of the Gemara, in which we haven't read yet, but in the Rashi you could see it says Uparchinon Elo Rebbe Lozer Hechi Boilo Dekevan De Bahochi Talia Milsa. Since the Tumas Begonim is dependent on this issue of did they leave or not, if they never left, so there's no Tumas Begonim. Mechinofik Korino Bevi Chabes Begonim. Once you leave the Azora with the Poram and Esrafim, you do absorb Tumas Begonim. The Ahadrinu, the Osu Achrini Lafukinu. If the Parma and Esrafim are brought back in and other people come along with the intention of carrying it out, afilu chashvis lehu motzi'in lo metamu hanoch basroi, even if you consider the new people that come along to take it out for its second time, even if you consider them as motzi'in, carriers out, lo metamu hanoch basroi adin nafki, they're not going to absorb Tumas Begonim until they actually leave. The Lahalo Karina Behu Vachayovo, because regarding them, they haven't yet arrived in the new Machne, namely the Machne Leviya, the second camp outside of the Machne Shechina. So as far as our understanding now, things are black and white. If you carried it out, you got Tumas Begonim. If the Parma and Esrafim are brought back in, and then someone else comes along to carry it out its second time, those new people are not going to absorb Tumas Begonim until they actually take it out. So what is exactly Rebbe Lozer's question? What point is not clear? Or what situation is not clear that he needs to ask about? Turning back to the Gemara, Elo Rebbe Lozer Hechi Boi La. What is Rebbe Lozer's question? The Gemara answers, Kagon, like, for example, the following case. Denekiti lo bebakulsi. Bakulsi are poles. Imagine the following. The Purim Hanisrafim were taken out of the Azara and then brought back into the Azara. After the Parm and Sofram are brought back into the Azara, they're attached to long poles, and the pole on the one hand is connected to the Parm and Sofram. On the other hand, there is someone holding it in the with the intention of, let's say, hauling the Parm and Sofram back out, and these people are standing outside the Azara. So the Parma and Esrafim that were once outside were brought back in, and at the same time there are people holding the poles, the other end of the poles. Imagine a long pole, and someone's holding the other end outside of the Azara. Let's now take a look at the Rashi, once we have that little illustration in mind. Rashi, Dinakiti Lahu, Dinakiti Law Bebakulsi. She'ochsum Bemaklois, they're holding the Parmes Rafim attached to sticks, to poles. Ve'oimdim Mibachutz, Lahotziom Lachar Shechazru. And those people holding the poles while standing outside are holding them with the intention of drawing or dragging outside once again the Parmen Esrafim that were brought back in. V'kome bayalei, and the question that is posed to Rebbe, or that is bothering Rebbe Lozer, mi amrinon kevan diyot sheyotzu chutz la'azora, do we say since they once left the Azora, kola asukin bohen mikan ve'ele chutz la'azora mitam begonim, anybody involved with them that's outside of the Azora will absorb Tumas Begadim. Oy Dilma, Kevan de Hodr Hodr. Or do we say that once the animals are brought back in, it's as if they never left, the Ad Dinafki, and that until the animals themselves leave, Lo Mitamu, there will be no Tumas Begadim, even to those people that are currently standing outside holding the poles. So that question remains. That's the scenario that is not clear to Rebbe Lozer. Before we go on in the Gemara, let's take a look at the topic heading that accompanies this new section. Aleph, Porim Hanisrafim, Beis, Poraduma, and Gimel, Soyer Hamishtaleach. These three types of animals, Legabi, Tumas, Begodim, Tumas Oichlin. We're going to be mentioning Tumas Begodim for those that are involved with them, and Tumas Ochlin, the ability of these animals to communicate Tuma to food items. Tana Rabbanan. We have a Tanaic source. Porim, that's the Parmen Esrafim. Upora, that's a reference to the Pora Aduma, the red heifer. And three, V'soyer HaMishtaleach, this is the Yom Kippur goat that is sent out of the Beis HaMikdash to the cliff located a number of kilometers outside of Yerushalayim, that as part of the Yom Kippur atonement process. Notice, those are three animals. The following numberings correspond to this list. We had 1, 2, and 3 just mentioned. Now, 3 that we see here in parentheses, HaMishaleach, is a reference to the person accompanying the sent-out goat of Yom Kippur. That's the HaMishaleach, the person, say, escorting the cow, the goat out of the Beis HaMikdash. HaSorfon, that's that number 2 in parentheses, is a reference to the people involved with burning the Pora Aduma, and this little one is a reference to the Pora Hanisrafim, the Hamotzion, those that carry the carcasses of the Pora Hanisrafim out of the Azara toward the burning site of the Pora Hanisrafim. These three situations are three kinds of people, the Mishaleach of the Sor Mishaleach, the Soreif of the Pora Aduma, the Motzi of the Pora Hanisrafim, Mitame Begodin. These people become Tomei, and the clothing they're wearing as well. Vehein Atzmon, these animals themselves, Einon Mitamin Begodim. If these animals come into contact with clothing that are lying around, let's say, or touch the clothing of people that are not involved with processing them at all, there's no Tumas Begodim. Avol mitamin oichlin umashkin. However, these animals, the carcass of the Pora Hanisrafim, the Pora Aduma, and the Sor HaMishtaleach, the goat that's walking out, do communicate Tumas Ochlin and Mashkin. They communicate Tuma to food and drink. Divrei Rabbi Meir. V'chachomim omrim, Pora uporim mitamin oichlin umashkin. The Pora Aduma and the Poram Hanisrafim. These two are two examples of animals that have been slaughtered already. they communicate tumasochem mitamen oichlun umashkin. They communicate food and drink tuma. However, sorry, mishtaleach, the goat that's walking out of the Beis Hamikdash toward the cliff, the sorim mishtaleach, which happens to be a live animal, eino mitame shu chai, it is alive. V'chai eino mitame oichlun umashkin. Live creatures do not communicate this kind of tuma. Tumas oichlun umashkin. We are now presented with a long question. You can see this by the kuf that's encircled to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text with a vertical dashed line. All of these lines are a build-up to the question. The gist of the following will be to suggest that Rebbe Meir's approach to things, which lumps together the Purim, Poroh, and the Sorim Mishaleach, or more accurately, includes the Sorim Mishaleach with the Purim and Poroh, his shita can be understood that even though the Sor HaMishlech is a live creature, it still is within the capacity of it to communicate tuma. That is understood, and the Gemara brings a basis for that approach. However, the Rabbanan approach is not so clear. In order to get a bird's eye view of what we're going to see, you can see initially, Bishlamal the Rabbi Meir, we have squiggle underlined that, and Elo the Rabbanon a few lines later, also squiggle underline. Bishlamal the Rabbi Meir, reading the Gemara now. I understand Rabbi Meir, who, with regard to the Sor Mishtaleach, says even though it's alive, it communicates tuma, based on a rule that's found Kidetona Debei Rabbi Shmuel, based on the rule found in the following Tanaic source, Kidetona Debei Rabbi Shmuel, the following Tanaic source was taught in the Yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel. I'll call Zera Zerua. That pasuk is the basis, the source for halachas regarding Tumas Oichlin. Mazroyin she'ein soifan litame tuma chamura tsrichin hechsher. Just like zroyin, like seeds or plants do not communicate tuma chamura, meaning they don't communicate tuma. Food does not communicate tuma to people nor vessels. They don't come to tuma chamura, as we just mentioned. Don't come to a situation. Food never comes to a situation where midoraisa, where on a Torah level it communicates tuma to people or vessels. And what characterizes them is tzrichin hechsher. In order for zroyim to mekabel tuma, they have to receive hechsher. Hechsher would mean they have to come into contact with liquids, particularly water. Af kol she'ein sofan l'tamei tuma chamura tzrichin hechsher. So too, anything that eventually does not communicate tuma chamura, in order for them to mekabel tuma, in order for them to absorb tuma, they require contact with water and then subsequent contact with something that would communicate the tuma, like a sheretz. Let's read that phrase again. Af kol she'ein soifan l'tamei tuma chamura tzrichin hechsher. Yotzas nevelas oif tahor. Excluded from this is the meat from a dead kosher variety bird. For example, a chicken that was not slaughtered. A chicken is a kosher variety bird. Meat from a dead chicken is mitama a person when he eats it. Shesoifa letame tuma chamura. The meat from a dead chicken, as opposed to, let us say, an orange, the meat from a dead chicken, it's a type of food item, it has the capacity of metama, of communicating tuma to a person. Ein tzricha hechsher. In order for the chicken meat to communicate tuma to the person, it doesn't require hechsher. Therefore, what do we see from here? We see the following rule. Things that that have the capacity of communicating tumah to people are themselves metame as they are, without any further heksher, contact with water, and no need for any further contact with other items that communicate tumah. So let's look at Shitas Rabbi Meir for a moment. The Sor HaMeshtaleach, we know that it is metama, the person who carries it or who takes it to the cliff. It's true that it's alive, and in general, live creatures don't communicate tumah, but the Sor HaMeshtaleach, based on the psukim themselves, the Sor HaMeshtaleach communicates tumah to the person taking it out. As a result of that, it's classified as metama tumah chamura. As a result of that, it has the ability to communicate tumah to oichlin and mashkim as well, just like we saw in the source featured by the Tana de Beir Bishmoel. Elo, the Gemara goes on, Elo the Rabbonon. But according to the Rabbonon, E is lehu the Tana de Beir Bishmoel, if they hold from the approach taken by this source we just learned, Afilu Sor HaMeshtaleach Nani, the Sor HaMeshtaleach, the goat that's on its way out to the cliff on Yom Kippur, should be able to communicate Tumas Oichlin. E less lay, if the Rabbanan don't hold from the teaching in that Tanaic source, then Pora Uporim Minolan, from where do they know that the Pora Aduma and the Pora Menestrophim carcasses, that they are able to communicate Tumas Oichlin? He also Rav Dimi Omar, when Rav Dimi came, he said, Amri b'mavrocha, they say in Eretz Yisrael, Tzrichin hechsher tuma mimokom acher. In fact, they do require hechsher tuma in order to metama tumas oichlin. Let's glance at the Rashi in the wide lines under the Gemara, Amri b'mavrocha, Tzrichin hechsher tuma mimokom acher. Ha ditana debei Rabbi Shmuel, Hochi Ka'omar. The Rabbonin's understanding of the teaching of the Bei Rabbi Shmuel is as follows. Kol she'ein soifoi letame tumah chamura. Anything that eventually will not metame tumah chamura, that will not communicate tumah to people and vessels, sarach hechshir tumah mimokom achir. She'iga b'sheretz oben avela, velo she'yetamu me'elov. Those kind of things do not have inherent tumah that they can convey, but rather those kind of items would have to come into contact with a primary source of tumah, a nevela or a sheretz, in order for them to pass tumah on any further. However, something that eventually can communicate tumah chamura, ein sarach liga b'tumah. It itself doesn't have to come into contact with a primary source of tumah, umetama tumas ochlin me'elov, and will be able to communicate tumas ochlin on its own, kagoyin pora uporim. Avol chozi letuma mihas be'alma bo'inon. However, the Rabbanan say, you need to have something that is fit to receive tumah in the first place. Velo ba'alei chayim, to the exclusion of living animals. Delo ashkichon bebehemois ba'alei chayim mitamin, because there is no precedent for living animals to convey tumah. So as a result of that, this particular requirement of called chozi letumah be'alma, with that requirement, the Rabbonin exclude the Sor HaMeshtaleach as being something that can communicate tumah. So to hone in on the specific point of difference between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. According to Rabbi Meir, the fact that something has the potential of communicating Tumah Chamura in any scenario, that qualifies it for communicating Tumah to Ochel Mashkin. According to Rabbanon, it's not sufficient that the item itself is that regarding this particular item, it can communicate Tumah Chamura. It has to be an item whose very nature is something that is associated with the realm of Tumah. That excludes a living animal, because a living animal in general is not within the realm of things that absorb and communicate Tumah. Back in the Gemara, we're at the diamond with a number 5 to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. Before learning the Gemara itself, we glance at the outside margin under our Nosei topic heading. Number 5 is featured in a diamond. Porim Hanisrofim Kishadayin Bazora. The Porim Hanisrofim, while they're still in the temple courtyard, Ma'u Shiyatamu Tumas Oichlin. Can they communicate Tumas Oichlin at that point? Granted, there's not yet Tumas Begodim, because they haven't been taken out. But what with regard to their ability to convey Tumah to other food items? Boy, Rabbi Lozer, Porim Hanisrofim Usim Hanisrofim. We're in the Gemara. Mahu shiitamu oichlin umashkin bifnim kibachutz. Can they communicate tumah to food and drink while they are still inside the azora, as they are able to communicate tumah when they're outside? Mechusar yitzia kemechusar maisa domi. Do we say that the fact that it's lacking yitzia, it has not yet been taken out, it is considered lacking an actual action to it? And as a mechusar maisa, as the fact that this action is lacking, they are not capable of metame, of communicating tumah. Oiloi, or the fact that it's mechusar maisa is not sufficient to remove them from the realm of tumas oichlin. Boser debaya hoder pashto. After he asked the question, he then resolved the question. Mechusar yitzia kemechusar maisa domi. The lacking of its having been taken out is considered a significant lacking, and therefore they will not communicate Tumas Oichlin. As we see the Gemara, the continuation of the Gemara, we notice a new geometric form. This draws our attention to the notes that accompany this new piece of Gemara. We see on the outside margin a house form with a mivne, a structural heading. Sidra shel sheilois, there will be a series of questions, benevelas oivtor v'tumas oichlin. The questions involve issues concerning the meat of a dead kosher variety bird. The example we'll continue with will be the meat of an unslaughtered dead chicken, and the realm of tumas oichlin. The nosei, the topic at hand, will be nevelas oivtor l'Rabbi Meir. Maush yitame oichlin umashkin bekezayas. A piece of dead chicken, according to Rabbi Meir. Let us say you have a kezayas quantity of nevelas of tohor. A kezayas quantity, that's an olive size amount. In general, if you have an olive size amount of food item, that's tomei, that is not sufficient for communicating tumah to other food items. In general, in order for a food item to communicate tumah to other food, you'd have to have a kibetza quantity, an egg's amount, an egg's size of tumah food, in order to speak about the ability of food to communicate tumah further on. Needless to say, a kibetza, an egg size quantity, is greater than a kezias quantity, an olive size quantity. In this particular case, we're going to be focusing on the meat of a dead chicken and its ability to communicate tumah when you have an olive size quantity of nevelas oiv tohor. The question itself lasts a number of lines, and that's indicated by the long question marking. You can see a shin that's encircled with a vertical dashed line to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. Bo mine Rabbi Abo bar Momol me Rabbi Chia bar Abo. Nevelas oif tohor le Rabbi Meir. The question is addressed to the shita, the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Mahu shiatame bekezayas. Can it communicate tumas oichlin if you have an olive quantity of dead chicken meat? We want to point out that shitas Rabbi Meir was, with regard to tumas oichlin, the requirement is that the item in question has the potential, has a potential of communicating tuma chamura. The question could not be addressed within the shitas Rabbanan, because the idea of having the potential for communicating tuma chamura alone is not enough for it to communicate tumas ochlin, as we saw in the previous discussion concerning the soyer hamishtalech. But Rabbi Meir, who holds that has the potential of communicating tuma chamura, has the ability of communicating tumas ochlin, like we saw by the soyer hamishtalech, there is room to raise the question concerning the nevelas oftor. The nevelas oftor has the ability of communicating tuma chamura, but only while it's being eaten by the individual. So let us continue with the Gemara. There are several points that we've numbered Aleph, Beis, and Gimel. The first two points are obvious, are not points of the question. Only Gimel, the third point, will be the point at which the question is going to be asked. So, scenario Aleph, number one, is demachto la'ara lo tiboyaloch. If you have dead chicken meat on the ground, in other words, it's not associated with a person. A person's not holding it. It's very clear that it won't convey tumas oichlin, because it's at this point rather distant from tuma chamura. What did we say? We already said that the ability of nevelas oftor to communicate tuma is only while it's being eaten. But a piece of dead chicken meat lying on the floor, having no contact with a person, is not considered within the realm of potential for tuma chamura. It's too far away, let us say. Beis, denokit befume loti boyaloch. If a person has in his mouth, he's eating nevelas oftor, and other food comes into contact with that which is in his mouth, so he has other food item in his mouth together with the dead chicken meat that he's chewing on, that too is no question, because the dead chicken meat is so obviously in the position for communicating tumo chamura. As we said, it communicates tumo as he swallows it, so it's about to be swallowed, so it's in the position that it will metame tumo chamura. So therefore, other food items that come into contact with the nevelas oftor that's in his mouth will also become tome. Ki tiboy aloch, the question that Rabbi Abba is asking concerns the nokit le biyodei. A person is holding in his hands a kezias quantity, an olive quantity, of nevelas of tohor. And now, the two sides of the question. Mechusar kreva kemuchusar maisa domi, oi loi. Do you say that which is lacking kreva, it's lacking being put in his mouth? It's in his hands, but it's not in his mouth yet. So that is considered lacking a fundamental element. It's considered mechusar mais. It's lacking this important action, and therefore it's still incapable of communicating tumas oichlin. It's still considered too far away from its ability to communicate tuma chamura. It's not in his mouth yet. It's only in his hands. Oh, eloi. Or do we say the fact that it is in his hand, and the fact and that which it's missing, merely the drawing of his hand to his mouth, that minor action is not significant enough to render it incapable of metame tumas ochlin. Therefore, it would be metame tumas ochlin. Omar lei. So, Rabbi Chiyo bar Abba, who was asked the question by Rabbi Abba, Rabbi Chiyo answers, mechuser krevo lav ki mechuser maise domi. The fact that it's lacking this mere drawing of the nevelas of Torah to his mouth is not considered lacking anything, and therefore it will be metama tumas oichlin. Eisvei, we have a triangle. This is a new geometric form as far as our sugi is concerned. So on the outside margin, you'll notice a mivneh heading. The triangle is part of a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of the sugi. As you will notice, as you skim down the next few lines, you'll notice the triangle being positioned alternatively point up, point down. That's an attempt through the markings to keep track of where one is holding at each stage. So with the point facing up, we will be dealing with kushios, questions. The point facing down will be responses, answers, tshuvos. Esvei, after Reb Chiya answered that mechuser kreva is considered as lav ke mechuser maisa, Esvei, we raise the following question. Before we read the Gemara itself, we should point out that this section is labeled, the same section that's about to be quoted in the Gemara in the frame, is labeled the middle section of a Tanaic source. We're dealing with a source that comes from Mishnayos in Maseches Taharos. This is the Metziosa, but it's at relative to the beginning, it can also be referred to by the term Seifa, the end. There, as we go on in the Gemara, there will be three sections from the same Tanaic source that are cited. So at some points, you'll have the middle section referred to as the middle, or it's the end, it's the Seifa relative to the very beginning of the source. This idea will be important to bear in mind as we go on in the Gemara, and let us not forget that we're dealing with Nevelas of Tor Bekezias, an olive quantity, and our whole question is focused within Shitas Rebbe Meir. So we have the following source, Esvei, Shloshos Advorim Nemru Benevelas of Tor. There are 13 halachas that are relevant to the case of Nevelas of Tor, to dead chicken meat. Veze Echod Mehen. One of them is as follows, Tzricho Machshova. The ein tzricha hechsher. Tzricha machshava means it needs to be thought of as food. Rashi has an example on the second line from the top. Tzricha machshava leitztarev pochos mikezayas mimeno lahashlim pochos mikebeitza oichlin lekabel tumas oichlin b'mago. If let us say you have some other kind of food item, but it's less than a kibetza in quantity. It's less than an egg's size of quantity. And as such, tumas ochlin in general is not communicated by tomei food unless it is an egg's quantity. Given a case where you have less than an egg's quantity of ochlin tomeim, can the ochlin tomeim be completed to a shiur, a quantity of an egg's amount of a kibetza, by it being attached to a pachos mikazayas of nevelas of tor? So we're saying that if you consider it as a food item, if you consider the pachos mikazayas of nevelas of tor as food, it can join up with the pachos mikabetza to form a unit of ochlin to communicate to Mas Ochlin. The Ein Sricha Hechsher, with regard to Nevelas of Tor, it doesn't require any contact with water to make it susceptible to receiving Tuma, and it doesn't need to touch any further primary source of Tuma, because this Nevelas of Tor itself, if you have the required amount, it will communicate Tuma to the person. Umetama tumas oichlin bekebeitza. we've dashed underlined the expression Begabetza because this is the main point for our discussion. The Nevelas of Tor will communicate Tumma to food if you have an egg quantity, an egg's quantity of dead chicken meat. My lav, Rebbe Meir, is this not, in fact, Rebbe Meir? So we would see from here very clearly that you need a kibetza quantity, and a kazayas quantity would not be sufficient. So Rebbe Chia, who answered before that a kazayas worth of nevelas of tor is capable of communicating Tumas Ochlin while it's being held in one's hand, doesn't seem to be accurate. The Gemara rejects this question. Loi, Rabbonon hi, this source in which the kibetza quantity was featured is not taught according to Rebbe. It's a shita of the Rabbonon. And the entire discussion that preceded this was with Reb Chia's psak, Reb Chia's ruling was a ruling within shita's Rebbe Meir. The Gemara asks, but the Hokotani Resha, the opening of this source says, Tzricha Machshava Ve'ein Tzricha Hechsher, Uman Shamisle Hai Svara. Regarding the Nevelas of Tor, it was stated that it needs Machshava and doesn't require any Hechsher. Who has been known to say that? Rebbe Meir. That Svara is known to have been promulgated by Rebbe Meir, who made a ratio Rebbe Meir, Seifonami Rebbe Meir. From the fact that the opening of this section is according to Rebbe Meir, it stands to reason that the Seifa, the section in which the expression Bekebetza appeared, the eggs quantity, is also taught within Rebbe Meir. And that would reinstate the question on Rebbe Chia that we saw before. That you can see, of course, from the fact that this piece of Gemara is accompanied by a triangle, two lines up from here, whose point was pointing up. The Gemara responds with an inverted triangle. Not so. Midi Irya, who says that the author of the opening section has to be the author of the continuation of the source. Ha Kidisa, the ratio is as it is, that's according to Rebbe Meir. The ratio which mentions Tzricha Machshav Ein Tzricha Hechsher, the Ha Kidisa, and the Seifa, or the continuation section where the Kibetza appeared, that is taught according to the Rabbanan. The Gemara asks, though, notice the triangle pointing up, V'ha midikotani Seifa, from the fact that the very end of the source says, Shchitasa umalikasa mitaheres trefasa mitumasa, the slaughtering, the proper slaughtering of an oif tohar. Let's say you have a chicken that doesn't drop dead. It's not a nevela, but it's a chicken that is slaughtered properly, or malika is the process of severing the neck with Cohen's thumbnail. The malika process is done to a chicken that's discovered to be a trefa. So the source says that the shchita or malika of a kosher variety bird, metaheres trefasa mitumasa, prevents the trefa of communicating tuma. It won't be considered tame. Man shamis le hai svora, who has been known to teach that the shchita of a kosher variety bird that's discovered to be a trefa is not metame? Rebbe Meir. That is known to be the opinion of Rebbe Meir. So, being that this seifa is Rebbe Meir, and being that you insisted that the very beginning of the source is Rebbe Meir, the very beginning of the source, namely the section that spoke about Tzricha Machshava and Tzricha Hechsher, and the middle section was not Rebbe Meir, so are you going to have to come out saying Reisha v'Seifa Rebbe Meir, Umetziyasa Rabbanan? And do you want to say that it's like a sandwich Tanaic source? The beginning and end section is taught by Rebbe Meir, and the middle section is taught by the Rabbanan. That's a rather odd type of Tanaic source. The Gemara answers, in, yes, Reisha v'Seifa Rebbe Meir, Umetziyasa Rabbanan. Before we go on to the next issue, we've included a host of arrows
to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. This was enable for one to find the relevant lines that are referred to when the Gemara speaks about the Reisha and Seifa being Rabbi Meir and the Metziosa being the Rabbanan. Continuing in the Gemara, this is a second house form. Now, the house form was already featured on Amud Aleph as being as representing questions that appear in as a series of questions regarding the Vela Sof Tor, according to Rabbi Meir, and issues of Oichlin and Mashkin, the Vela Sof Tor, according to Rabbi Meir, being able to, let's be a little more accurate for a moment, a series of questions regarding the Velas of Tor and Tumas Oichlin. So, Omar Le Rav Hamnuna, the Rebbe Zera, Lo Tesiv Akaroch Ad Amris Li Ha Milsa. Don't sit down until you tell me the following. And here's the question. The Velas of Tor Le Rebbe Meir. Moinin Lo Rishon Vesheni Oy Ein Moinin Boy Rishon Vesheni. The dead chicken meat, which according to Remeir is Mitama Tumas Ochlin on its own, Bekezias. Does the Neveus of Tohor create a situation where the food it touches is classified as a first level tuma, a rishon tuma, and as such, if it turns around and touches a second food item, it would be called a second level of tuma. We can refer to this as the tuma hierarchy. Or do we say otherwise? Or do we say that we don't, that the contact of the kezias of nevelas of tor does not create this tuma hierarchy, that although it's metame, the first food item it comes into contact with, that food item won't communicate tuma to an additional food item. Omale, let's actually read the question again. Nevelas of Tohor the Rabbi Meir, Moinin lo Rishon Vesheni, do we count, do we establish the Tuma hierarchy whereby we count the first item of food it contacted as a Rishon Tuma, and then when that Rishon touches an additional food item, it will be classified as a Sheni, a second level Tuma. Oy ein moinin boy rishon v'sheni, or do we not say that the kezias of nevelas of tome of nevelas of tor is capable of establishing this hierarchy? Omale, so Rabbi Zera answers, kol hecha de mitama odom bemaga moinin bo rishon v'sheni, kol hecha de loy mitama odom bemaga. Ein moinin boy rishon v'sheni. Going over this rule, wherever an item can communicate tumah to a person through contact, an example of that would be a dead sheretz. If we can imagine a dead mouse. A dead mouse, upon contacting a person, the person becomes tumah. That item establishes the tuma hierarchy. In other words, if a dead mouse, let us say, would touch a piece of food, the food would become a rishon, and that food item, upon contact with some other food, would make a sheni. And that's not limited to food. In fact, the dead sheretz, if it touches a person, the person becomes a rishon l'tuma, and the person, upon contacting a piece of food, the food would be a sheni. Items that do not establish tumas odom, contact with a person, upon contact do not create tuma, do not establish the person as being tomei. So then the tuma hierarchy that we've described already is not set up. So if we think about the nevelas of tor, is the nevelas of tor mitama odom b'mago? The answer to that is no. It's not. It's metama a person only while he's eating it. It's not metama b'mago. If a person touches a piece of dead chicken, he does not become tame. Boy mine Rabbi Zera mi Rabbi Ami Barchia. A third question. The Amri Law, another version. As far as the names are concerned, Rabbi Zera is asking of mi Rabbi Ovin Bar Kahana. He's asking of Rabbi Ovin. Ha Disnan, the following source. The following source describes a situation where you have a Chatzi Zayas, a half olive quantity of Nevela, of dead animal meat, and another half a kezias, another half olive quantity of dead animal meat. The pieces are themselves, as we mentioned, two half olive quantities, and between these two half olive quantities, there's a stream of liquid. The liquid, in effect, is in contact simultaneously with both half olive quantities. That's called chiburei oichlin. So the source teaches chiburei oichlin al yedei mashkin. Chibur letuma kala v'ein chibur letuma chamura. It creates a connection with regard to tuma kala. Tuma kala is the realm of tumas oichlin, but it does not establish a connection with regard to tuma chamura, with regard to the ability of communicating tuma to a person. Therefore, if you have this setup of two half kezesim of nevela that are connected with a stream of liquid, and a piece of food touches one of these half kezesim, the question right now is moinin boy rishon v'sheni. Once we've said that the connection of the two half zasim of nevela do communicate tumas oichlin, the question is, the oichlin that touches one of these half kezasim in this particular position, does that food item that touched the chatzizayas of the nevela able to communicate tuma to an additional piece of food, thereby establishing what we refer to as the tuma hierarchy, or no? Reading this in the Gemara, Aleph, one side of the question is moinin boi rishon v'sheni, o beis, or possibly ein moinin boi rishon v'sheni. Rabbi Ami answers, Omar le, kol hecha de metame odom, min moinin boi rishon v'sheni. Tuma hierarchy is established when there's a case of tumas odom in the picture. Kol hecha de lo metame odom, ein moinin boi rishon v'sheni, where a person cannot become tomei from the item in question, so there is no tuma hierarchy established. So therefore, in the case we described before of the two chatzi zesim of nevela, that there is liquid attaching, running between the two of them, we mentioned that if a person touches one of those chatzi zesim, he will not become tomei. Therefore, food that touches one of these chatzi zesim will, although itself become tomei, but won't communicate tuma further on to a sheni level. Yotsu elu v'elu, the Mishnah was describing the carrying out of the Purim HaNisrofim. They are carried out, and they are eventually burned, the carcasses are burned, outside of three machnois. We glance at the side of our Gemara under our topic heading, the Nose, Makoros, sources le for the following. Mokoin Srefo Shel Hanisrofin, Chutz Legimel Machnos. We're going to be looking for a source for the idea that the place of burning, the site for the burning of the Purim and Asir Nisrofim, is outside of the three camps, outside of, and from on a practical level, outside of Yerushalayim. The Beis HaMikdash represents Machne Shechina, the Har HaBayis, the Temple Mount, represents Machne Levia, and Yerushalayim itself represents the third camp, Machne Yisrael. The place of the burning of the Purim and Sirmin Srofim is outside of all three camps. From where do we know that? Another point. Tumas begodim cholo michutz lamachne achas lefi harabonon. According to the Rabbanon, the tumas begodim that is absorbed by those that are carrying the parim and sirim and srafim outside of the Beis HaMikdash, that tuma is established or kicks into action once they depart from one machne, namely the machne shechina. In other words, one doesn't have to get to the burning site in order for tumas begodim to kick in. Tumas begodim is established already much earlier, at the point that they left the first machne. In our note here, we're featuring the Shitas of Rabbanan. We happen to know the Shitas Rabbi Shimon holds, we saw this in the Mishnah, he holds that Tumas Begodim takes place only when the things are being burnt, actually burnt. The mere departure from the camps is not sufficient to communicate Tumas Begodim. And the third point that will be dealt with in the Gemara is Ma Loimed Rabbi Shimon Shecholik Al Rabbanan Beinyan Mokoim the Tumas Begodim. What does Rabbi Shimon, who disagrees with the Rabbanan with regard to the place at which Tumas Begodim kicks in, meha posuk shel harabbanan? What will Rabbi Shimon learn from the posuk that the Rabbanan use as their source? So turning to the Gemara, minohani mili detonu Rabbanan. We have a source that's part of a larger Tanaic source, and the Rashi provides the background for this particular topic. Lahalon hu omer chutz legimul machna. So the source makes a reference here to the par helam dover shel tzibor, in which the Torah says that its site for burning is outside of three camps. Kan, with regard to Yom Kippur, lemachne achas, the Torah makes reference to being outside of one camp. The problem here is that the par Yom Kippur is an example of one of the nisrafin. So if we know that by the par helam dovor shel tzibor, which is an example of a sacrifice that is burnt, and that it is burnt outside of three machnos, that's a given for right now. The par Yom HaKippurim should also require being outside of three machnos. So why does the posuk in the context of the par Yom Kippur speak about being outside of one camp? The source explains, Lomar Loch, this reference to being outside of one camp teaches me, Kevan Shiyotza Chutz L'machna Achas Mitame Begodim, that once they have left the Machne Shechina, that is enough to set into motion Tumas Begodim. So the reference to the one camp in the case of the Par Yom Kippur is not a reference to its site of burning, but rather it teaches me this halacha, the halacha of the Rabbanon, that Tumas Begodim kicks in after they left one camp. Omar Mar, Lahalon Ata Noisein V'chulei. This is a reference to the Par Helam Dovr Shetzibor, that it requires being, as its burning site, to be outside of three machnois. Minolon, from where do we know this? The Tanur Rabbanon. We have a Tanaic source, which will be the source of this idea, or this fact, that you need to be outside of three camps for to become a legitimate site for the burning of the Parim and Esrafim. So the source says, V'hoitzi es kol hapar el michutz lamachne. That's a posuk with regard to the par Kohen Moshiach. This is a sacrifice brought by the Kohen Gadol in the event that he issues an erroneous Tanaic ruling. This posuk is telling me, chutz legimol machnois. It's to be taken out of three camps. The truth is that the posuk itself speaks in the singular, chutz la machaneh, sounds like outside of one camp, and yet we're telling you at this point that means outside of three camps. Well, do you mean to tell me three camps, or maybe you mean to say only outside of one camp is enough? Well, kishu omer beparo edo. The pasuk says in the context of the par edo, this is the par helendover shel tzibor. This is a sacrifice that's also one of the nisrofen, one of those that's completely burnt, and that's brought in the event that the high court, the Sanhedrin, issues an erroneous legal ruling. And the pasuk there says michutz lemachne, that it is to be brought michutz lemachne. She'ein Talmud loymar, I don't need to tell you anything about the par ho'edo, sharei kvar nemar. There's a posuk that says, kashir soraf es par ha'par ho'rishoin. This posuk tells me that the par ho'edo is treated like the par moshiach. So, if in the case of the par moshiach there was a reference to being outside a camp, there's no need to say in the case of the par helam dovor, outside of a camp. So what is it here for? What is the mechutz lemachne that's seemingly redundant? What is it teaching me in the context of the pasuk that's stated in the context of the par hoeda? Litein loy machne shnia. This establishes a second camp. Well, kishu omer mechutz lemachne ba deshen. In Vayikra, Perek Vav, Pasuk Dalet, the expression Michutz Lamachne appears in the case of the Deshen. That's a topic dealing with the ashes of the Mizbeach, of the altar. The ashes were taken off, were cleared off, when after they accumulated, they were taken off the top of the Mizbeach and brought to a place. And the Pasuk says, Michutz Lamachne. Well, She'ein Talmud Lomar, but I don't really need to tell you Shmichutz lamachne by the deshen. Shvari kvar nemar. The pasuk says, "Al shefech hadeshen isoreif." So, what is the need for michutz lamachne by the deshen? Litein loy machne shlishis. This is to establish a third machne. The Rashi, in explaining this last point by the Deshen, whereby we said, you don't really need to tell me Michutz Lamachne as far as Hoitzoah's Deshen is concerned. Rashi, the first line under the Gemara, She'ein Tamad Lomar, Ein Malamed Klum. This pasuk of Michutz Lamachne, written by the temple, by the Mizbeach ashes, doesn't seem to teach me anything. Dano Yodano del Michutz Lamachne Motzino, so I know that the ashes are taken to a point outside the camp. It says in the context of the sacrifices themselves, the Parmenis Rafim sacrifices, it says El Shefech Hadeshen. It says it's taken to the place that the ashes are poured. Uksiv behu, and by the Parmenis Rafim it already says Al Michutz Lamachne. So there's a reference to the place of ashes being Michutz Lamachne. So what do I need to be told additionally Michutz Lamachne by the ashes? So the source tells me that's Litein Lo Machne Shlishis. That establishes that this whole topic of Nisrofin is to be done outside of three camps. Rabbi Shimon, Hai Michutz Lamachne Mai Ovid Lei. Well, Rabbi Shimon, who says that there's no Tumas Begodim until the fire takes hold of the Parim and Esrofim, until rove of the animal is burnt, and only then do you have Tumas Begodim. So, Hai Michutz Lamachne Mai Ovid Lei. What does Rabbi Shimon do with the expression Michutz Lamachne that we saw above in the case of the Par Yom Kippur, of the Yom Kippur sacrifice that the Rabbanon said after leaving one camp there is Tumas Begodim? So the question right now is, what does Rabbi Shimon do with that particular pasuk? Answer, Miboyalei Lichidistanya. He will need it for the following source. The following source continues to the top of the next Omid. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Ne'emar Kan Michutz L'Machne. It says by the Par Yom Kippur, outside of the camp. We bearing in mind that the Par Yom Kippur is one of the Purim and Nisrofim. V'ne'emar Lahalon, it says by the Poradumo Michutz L'Machne. It says by the red heifer, also that expression. Ma kan chutz l'gimel machnos. Just like by the Purim and Esrofim, it's done outside of three camps. The burning site is outside of three camps. Af lahalon chutz l'gimel machnos. So too, with regard to the Poraduma, it is to be done outside of three camps. Uma lahalon lemizrocho shirushalayim, and just like by the Poraduma, its blood is sprinkled to the eastern side of, it's just, the sprinkling takes place on the eastern side of Yerushalayim. It's done on the Mount of Olives, on the Har HaMashva. Blood is sprinkled there in the direction of the Beis HaMikdash. So when you're on the Mount of Olives, you're standing east of Yerushalayim. Af Kan lemizrocho shel Yerushalayim. So too, with regard to the Purim and Esrofim, the site for the burning is to the east of Yerushalayim. So we see from here that Rabbi Shimon uses the Michutz L'machne posuk by Yom Kippur to link it up with the Michutz L'machne that you find by the Poradumo, and we thereby learn that both of these are done outside of three machnos. The burnings take place outside of three machnos. And we also learn that that is to be to the east of Yerushalayim. Ula Rabbonon, Hecha Sarafluh. According to the Rabbonon, which direction of Yerushalayim does the burning take place? The last the issue of direction was featured under Rabbi Shimon's, featured according to Rabbi Shimon. What do the Rabbonim say on this matter? Kedesanya, Hechon Nisrofen. Where are the Purim and Nisrofen burnt? With Sfon Yerushalayim, Chutz L'Sholosh Machnos. So the first opinion says to the north of Yerushalayim, outside of three Machnos. Rabbi Yossi Haglili Omer, Abes Hadeshen Nisrofen. Rabbi Yossi Haglili says a different halacha. He doesn't address the issue of direction, but he says that you have to have ashes of the Mizbeach before, you have to have ashes of the Mizbeach on location before you burn the Purim and Esrofim there. Omar Rava, Man Tana de Polig Olei de Rabbi Yossi Haglili. Who is the Tana that disagrees with Rabbi Yossi Haglili? Rabbi Yossi Haglili just said that you're supposed to have ashes on location before you burn the Purim and Esrofim where you burn them. There is a Deya that disagrees. Who is that? Rabbi Lezer ben Yankifi, the Sanyo, Al Shefech HaDeshen, Shiehei Shom Deshen. The Pasuk is quoted, and it says, Al Shefech HaDeshen Yisarev. And regarding that, the Tanakama learns that there shall be ash there beforehand. That's the opinion of Rabbi Yossi Haglili. Rabbi Lozer ben Yankov, you see, he disagrees and says, Omer Shihei Mekoimoi Meshupach. It means it must be a sloping area. But no need to have ashes there beforehand. Omer Le Abaye. Abaye responds and says, who says that Rabbi Lezer ben Yankov necessarily disagrees with regard to the presence of ashes? Dilma b'mekoyme meshupach pligi. Maybe their argument is only with regard to the need for a sloping location. However, Rabbi Lezer ben Yankov will agree to the need of having ashes there at the burning site beforehand. We see a slash mark in the Gemara, indicating that that which follows is a new idea. Under our Nosei topic heading in the outside margin, we see we've written in Deos Nosofos B'mi Shayech Tumas Begodim B'Sreifas and Esrofim. Additional opinions with regard to whom is the Tumas Begodim applicable when dealing with the burning of those kinds of sacrifices that are need to be burnt. Tana Rabbanan Hasoreif Mitame Begodim V'lo Hamatzis Esha'ur. The one who burns the carcasses absorbs Tumas Begodim. One who's involved with the actual burning, while the animal is being burnt, one who is involved at that stage, he absorbs Tumas Begodim. There's a Rashi that's worth noting. At the Rashi says, Hasoreif Hamisasek Bitzorche Sreifoson Kegona Messiah Bishas Sreifo. He was involved with the need, with the burning needs at the time that it's burning. B'hai Tano Islei Kerebi Shimon the Ein Metamin Begodim Ad Sheyutzis Bohen Ha'ur. This Tana is in agreement with Rabbi Shimon, who holds that there is no Tumas Begodim until it is being burnt. This, of course, is in contrast with the sheet of the Chachamim that it holds there is Tumas Begodim at the point that it's being carried out. That's initially carried out. So this source says that the Tumas Begodim is appropriate to the Soreif, Velo Hamatzis Esor, but not to the one who simply lights the fire. Velo Hamisader is Hamarocha, nor is there Tumas Begodim applicable to the one who sets up the fireplace, sets up the logs for the fire. Velo Hamisader, we'll read that again. Velo Hamisader is Hamarocha, Mitame Begodim. So the source is telling us the Matzis is Ur, not Lo Matzis is Ur, Velo Hamisader is Hamarocha, Mitame Begodim. Ve'ezu ha-soreif, who is the soreif? Who is considered that? Ze ha-mesayim b'sha'asreif, for that refers to those who were assisting at the time of the burning. Yochol af mishinasu eifer mitam begodim? Are we to suggest that even after it becomes ash, people who are involved with the ashes, the remnants of that which was burnt, also has tumas begodim? Talmud lomar oisam. Oisam mitam begodim, u'mishnasim efer ein mitam begodim. The word osam implies the animals are mitam begodim, but not the ash that remains from the animals. Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon Omer, oisam mitam begodim, nitach haboser ein mitam begodim. So he has a similar but different drasha. He says the animals are mitam begodim, but not at the point that's nitach bosar. Nitach bosar, superficially, would mean that, but not at the point that it's become burnt. So, my binai, what's the difference between classifying the completion of Tumas Begodim, the ending of the Tumas Begodim, as Mishinas and Efer, versus Nitach HaBosar? Notice we've dashed underlined these two expressions to highlight the question here. So what's the point of difference? Omar Rava, Iko Binayu Deshavio Harucha. The point of difference will be with regard to the meat once it becomes a coal. Rashi Deshavio Harucha. Rashi says the Havi Nitach HaBosar. This is a point at which the meat has been charred. Completely charred, we'll say, but it's not ash yet. So that would be considered nitach basar. That's therefore, according to the second opinion, the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, at the point that it becomes that becomes harucha, becomes a charred piece of meat. At that point, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, there would be no longer any tumas begodim for anyone involved from that point onwards. However, according to the Tanna Kamma, it may have turned into a coal, but it's not ash yet. And therefore, there still would be tumas begodim. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.